Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.
You shouldn't have to suffer with anxiety, but if you do, now is the time to head over to quietbegins.com and get 50% off the powerful SAFE system to give you the break you need from anxiety.
Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now.
Hello, welcome to the show. My name is Paul Coliani. I want to help you increase your emotional intelligence, handle toxic situations with grace and ease, and give you the tools to show up as your authentic self. Everything on this show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. I remember a long time ago, I decided to create a philosophy in my life and to follow that philosophy as well as I could, as much as I could, as often as I could, because life was challenging and life was stressful, and life is challenging and life is stressful, and we have to deal with it. But I have noticed that when I follow my philosophy, it usually goes better. And there's some sacrifice with my philosophy, and I'm going to share with you my philosophy in a moment, but there is some sacrifice, there is some compromise, there are things that you may end up doing if you follow this philosophy that you wouldn't normally do if you didn't have such a philosophy to follow, if you didn't have a path that you've laid out and you've told yourself, I am going to do this 99% of the time. Life isn't always easy. It does throw us challenges. And because of that, I wanted a beacon to follow. I wanted that lighthouse on the shore that no matter what happens, I can head toward that lighthouse. I can course correct. I can pivot as needed and head toward that lighthouse. So the philosophy that I created, I mean, this isn't a new philosophy. This isn't something that you haven't heard before in other ways, in other words. But the way I word it is, if I'm trudging through mud, then I'm probably going in the wrong direction. This could mean a number of things to a number of people. But for me, it really describes something that's just way too complex, that no matter how hard I try, the mud never gets more shallow. It decreases in its intensity or depth. It continues to be a pain in the butt. It's just too deep. My boots fall off, and now I'm in my bare feet, and it sure seems like I'm going nowhere really slowly. I'm just going nowhere, and it's hard work to get there. So my philosophy is, if I'm trudging through mud, I'm probably going in the wrong direction. And I apply that philosophy. I like to line up with the things in my life, the things that are happening in my life, with that philosophy. That doesn't mean there won't be hard times that I need to work through and I need to work out. It just means there's a give-up point. There's a breaking point. There's a give-up point. There's a point where I believe that when things are just so complex that you're probably going in the wrong direction. This doesn't apply to everything. This is just a general philosophy, a general rule that I follow in my life that is absolutely breakable. This is a breakable rule, a breakable philosophy. And all that means is that I get to use it whenever I need it. And using it might mean just telling myself, this is just too complex. It's too challenging. It's not worth the trip. You know, the journey is supposed to be what fulfills us, not the destination, or at least, you know, I look at it both ways. The destination can be very fulfilling, but the journey is what we're told that's supposed to fulfill us. But if the journey is so complex and every time you take another step, it's just more mud and it's getting in your clothes and getting under your fingernails and getting in your nose, it's just too much. I like to assess where I'm going and how far I've gotten. And if the trend line is going up and to the right, or am I failing? Is it just too complex? And I'm not saying if it's too difficult. I don't mind a difficult journey. I don't mind that at all. And I think that's important. We have to have some difficulty in our lives so that things get easier. That may not be a popular opinion, but I think having difficulty in our lives makes the future easier, because when we learn the difficult part, when we master it, or at least get through it and realize, hey, we survived. I survived that difficulty. So now when it comes again, I'll be able to do that challenge again. I may not like it, but I'm going to do it again. So I think that's important. You take these lessons into the future so the difficulties come and makes life easier. Even though that doesn't sound like it would, but the difficulties come, it can make life easier. Again, this doesn't apply to everything, but in general, I think it's important to have a philosophy to follow so that when life gets too complex, you know what to do next. When I was younger and I said yes to everything because I was afraid to say no, then things got really complex. I got burnt out at my job. I got burnt out in my relationships, typically my friendships, because I would people-please others to my own detriment. I mean, that's really what people-pleasing turns into, is when you get burnt out because you are pleasing others and saying yes to things that you don't want to do, or saying no to things that you do want to do. I mean, people-pleasing is more like offering yourself up. It's sacrificing yourself. It's sacrificing your time. It's sacrificing your energy because you are afraid of confrontation. You're afraid of honoring yourself, honoring your boundaries. You're afraid to tell people what you really think, and you're afraid to do what you really want to do. So I lived a long life doing things that I didn't want to do and making friendships based on wanting to be liked and wanting attention and being the nice guy. I did all of these things to my own detriment, to my own emotional deficit. And what that did was, again, cause me to burn out and over again. And so I can look at the past, and if I used this philosophy in the past, which I didn't, but if I did, I might have been in a job situation where I said, hey, you know, this is too complex. It's too complex, which means I'm going in the wrong direction. I'm trudging through mud. It doesn't make sense that this is so complex. So I must be going in the wrong direction. What does going in the wrong direction mean? It means that I'm probably doing something wrong. If I'm experiencing something so complex that it's draining my energy every time I do it, you know, feels like trudging through mud, then I'm probably doing something wrong. So that means I have to figure out what I'm doing wrong. That could mean that I have to get out of the situation. But to me, getting out of the situation was my coping mechanism. Oh, I'm so burnt out by this, I need to get out of it. I'm so burnt out at my job, I need to get out of it. So I coped by escaping. And when you cope by escaping, you end up dealing with the difficulty again in the future. So difficulties are great to have in your life to give you an opportunity to learn how to cope with a situation, which means you are developing new or better coping skills that allow you to process things better. And when you process them better, you feel better. You have less stress, or maybe it's not less stress, but you learn how to do things in a way that create a better environment for you and others around you sometimes. And when you are in a better environment, you feel better. So overall, in the long run, it does create less stress, especially if you learn how to cope in the moment. So learning how to cope is one of the ways to create less stress in your life and make the path of life a little bit easier, just a little bit, a little bit easier, because again, there are going to be difficulties, but every difficulty you deal with gives you an opportunity to learn how to cope with it if you take that opportunity. If it's a complex situation or complex relationship, or there are so many complexities of the relationship, then maybe your philosophy can be something similar to mine. If this is too complex, then I need to change something or do something differently. For example, my typical length of stay at any job was about 4 years. So I would get burnt out at 4 years, which means I emotionally drained myself for 4 years, which means I probably had a 4-year reserve of emotional energy or any type of energy. I was in a situation or relationship and I could handle it or cope with it for about 4 years. And this is something good to know about yourself. How long can I handle something? Or at least something difficult or complex. I have a shelf life of about 4 years for any type of energy that I invest into something, or at least I had a shelf life of about 4 years, because the difficulties would rise and my coping mechanisms didn't change. So I would leave situations after 4 years, which reset the clock, and now I have another 4 years. So I could pretty much predict that when I get into a relationship or any type of situation, that in about 4 years, my coping mechanisms would reach their peak. For me personally, it doesn't apply to romantic relationships. I'm usually a long-termer, if I can be, but those didn't last long because a lot of them didn't last long because they couldn't handle me. They saw that I was dysfunctional in many ways. You know, I've talked about this before, but my past relationships, they failed because I was so dysfunctional and I was toxic. I was emotionally abusive, and I had to learn and grow and heal from those relationships and from being that person so that I wasn't that person anymore. And that has to do with coping mechanisms as well. Because once you learn how to cope, then you get through the situation and you don't carry any dysfunction or unhealthy behavior forward. Which is why I was saying the difficulties that come along give you an opportunity to learn how to cope better, to learn a healthy response, a healthy behavior, so that when that's fixed, the future becomes easier. I shouldn't say fixed, but healed. When that's healed, the old unhealthy behavior, when that's healed, you don't carry it forward. There are some things that are okay to carry forward, like healthy responses and healthy behaviors, but some you don't want to keep because you might be running into a limitation like I was. I had a 4-year mark for every career, and I also I had more resilience with romantic relationships. But even my friendships didn't last long either. They actually have like a 4-year mark as well. Once the 4 years was up, I was emotionally drained. Not their fault. No one's fault but mine. I became emotionally drained because I just wasn't truthful. I wasn't honest with my feelings. I was afraid to be confrontational. I was afraid to speak my mind. So I would say things that other people, or at least I believed other people wanted to hear, and I would become adaptive to what I believed they wanted me to be. I know I'm telling you all the stuff that has to do with me, but I'm hoping if you're listening now that perhaps you can relate to some of this. Because if you can, yes, there is a way to turn this around. There is a way to transform so that you aren't this way anymore. Or at least you start decreasing this about yourself. And the coping mechanisms I'm talking about have to do with how you handle stress and difficult situations. Because if you can learn what's not working and change that, your life changes. It becomes easier. I use that term very lightly, but it does. It becomes easier. If something was 100% difficult before, the next time it'll be, who knows, 99% difficult, or 98, or 70% difficult, or maybe even zero. I've gotten to that point with some things in my life. Other things, I'm probably still at 60%, but there are times that I've had to deal with, that I'm sure you've had to deal with, that after you've successfully dealt with them and moved past them, you get into a better space inside yourself. You feel more comfortable in your own skin. And when you feel more comfortable in your own skin because you've dealt with this challenge, when the challenge comes along again, you know how to handle it. It's sort of like when I came up with the question, what would I do or say if I had absolutely no fear of the consequences? That's sort of a philosophical question for myself too, even though I apply it in actuality. I apply it to my life. I'll be in a situation or a challenging situation, a complex situation, and I'll ask myself, what would I do or say if I had absolutely no fear of the consequences? The answer is your truth, or my truth in this case. The answer is my truth. And when I know my truth, I know that if I align with my truth and I follow my truth, you know, I do what I believe to be true for me, I align with it, then what happens is my life gets easier. I keep repeating that over and over again, but it's true. Life gets easier when you follow your truth. It gets harder at first. I'm not going to lie. It will be hard when you apply your truth, but it gets easier overall because you are no longer out of alignment with your highest intentions for yourself, for lack of a better way to put it. I think that's a good way to put it, though. You have intentions for yourself. You want to apply those intentions or follow those intentions inside yourself, but the obstacles, the mental obstacles that rise up inside you prevent you from doing that, which keeps life difficult. It repeats the complexities in your life if you aren't in alignment with what you really want for yourself. A good example is you have a parent or an authority figure in your life that raised you or was a part of your life, and they're really toxic. They're just awful. They say hurtful things, or they do hurtful things, or they're very neglectful. They just don't show up the way you want and need them to show up. And so every time you're around them, maybe during the holidays, this is being recorded during the holidays, it could happen, you meet up with this person again. You are at a gathering, or who knows, you just see them in your life again, and now you have to talk to them, and you know it's going to go pretty badly. It's not going to go well. And then they open their mouth, and they say something awful, and then there you are again, having to deal with this awful thing. And you knew it was coming. No matter how much preparation, you knew it was coming. So here you are dealing with this unhealthy or toxic behavior, and you're just saying to yourself, why does this have to be so difficult every time this person is around? Why does it have to happen? Why me? Why anyone? Why do we have to deal with this? So this is a point where I would ask myself the question, what would I do or say if I had absolutely no fear of the consequences? Oh my God, that's not going to go well, because what I would do or say would certainly cause a lot of trouble. But what would happen? I mean, this is where now I'm visualizing what would happen if I actually did it or said it. Like my stepfather opens his mouth at dinner, and I finally say, you know what? Every time you open your mouth, you are an effing embarrassment, and I wish you would just shut your damn mouth. I would say something like that. You know, that would be the thought. I mean, this may or may not be true, but this is what I'm thinking off the cuff. Okay, I said that. Now what? So I'm visualizing what would happen next. Would he get up? Would he hurt me? Would he scream? What would he do? And I think the thought that comes to mind is he would probably throw a glass, maybe at me, maybe at a window, maybe at a wall, maybe at someone else. So I would visualize that happening and realize, oh, gee, you know, I can't honor myself right now. I can't align with my truth. Because if I did that, that's a battle I don't want to be in. I don't want to create that mess. And not only that, I'll probably get someone else hurt in the room. So maybe I shouldn't do that. But it does align with what I'm thinking. So if I did that, that would honor my truth. But let me visualize that forward. Oh, it would be a problem for the rest of my family. So that creates more complexity in my life. So maybe I shouldn't do that. So I'm just sharing with you my thought process that if I were to say something that I knew was I was in alignment with, then something else could happen that makes my life more complex. So before, I'm in a situation with one toxic person and everyone's dealing with the toxic person in their own way, and I have this question come to mind, what would I do or say if I had absolutely no fear of the consequences? And my truth comes up, I'm not going to do that. Because I am also going to realize that it makes my life more complex. So this is something just to keep in mind. Again, this is sort of common sense, but I'm sharing it with you just in case you decide that, oh, I am going to say what's on my mind right now. How much more complex will your life get if you align with that? So that might be something that you look at and go, well, that might be the wrong thing to do. This may be in alignment with what I want to do, but it's not the right thing to do because it makes my life more complex. And my goal is to make my life less complex. I want to make things easier for me. So what's my next thought on that? Well, if I really want to make my life easier, then perhaps I should have a follow-up question like, what would make my life easier? There's another one that should align with your truth, because if you know there's a path to take to make your life easier, wouldn't you want to take it? I know, it's not always possible. The stars don't always align for you to do that. It may not be possible, but ask yourself the question, what would make my life easier? My first thought in my example might be, well, if this guy didn't exist or he lived on the other side of the world, that would make my life easier. Okay, but what are the chances of that happening? Throw that question in there too. What are the chances of that happening? Well, the chances are very slim, and it probably will never happen. Okay, so I need to stay in some realistic thought process here. What else? What else would make my life easier? Well, my life would be easier if I didn't attend these events. Okay, that's possible because you're not going to see this person anymore, but you're also not going to see other people in your life as well. All right, so what else can I do? What else could make my life easier? What if I limit my time around him at these events? Yeah, that's great. It's not always easy, but certainly, I mean, that is actually something I do now. If I ever see him, I limit my time with him. I limit my time in his vicinity, in his proximity, so that I don't have to deal with him. But is there anything else that could make my life easier? Yes, I could probably just hold my own gathering and not invite him. There's a thought. How will that go? Will I hear about it later? Probably not from every other family member, but I might hear it from him. But it does make my life easier. That's a thought. And I'm not saying that any of these should be the way I go, but I'm just thinking about all these paths that I could open up and which one I would follow that would make my life easier, and which one that would help me stop trudging through the mud to eliminate the complexities of my life. How can I do it differently? Then, at the same time, I might just have to give up. This is where the sacrifice part comes in. I might have to give up a part of my life. I might have to say, look, family, I'm only going to visit you on non-holidays because every time we get together, he's there. And he ruins my time. He ruins my connection with you. He ruins how I feel inside myself. And yes, I have a choice on how to respond and react to him, but he makes me sick, so I don't want to be around him. So because of that, I will not be attending holidays if he's there. That may make me sound like a baby, but I don't care. Whoa, what's that? You're going to honor yourself even though people might look down on you. Well, here's the thing. People who love and support you are going to support your happiness. They're going to support the decisions that make you feel good, that make you feel better about yourself. They're going to support the path that makes you happiest. So the people that don't support you in that way, they have to work on their own issues. They have their own complexities in life. And you not showing up in the way that they want you to show up, they have something going on inside of them that maybe is a little controlling, maybe is a little selfish. Maybe they're afraid that if you don't show up the way they want you to show up, that they're more alone in their problems now. Well, if you're not here, Paul, then how am I going to deal with him? Ah, well, now I feel like I'm getting dragged back into a vortex of dysfunction and misery because other people aren't aligning with what they need to align with inside themselves and doing what they need to do for themselves because they're trudging through the mud and they don't want to do it alone. I don't know. I can't help you through the mud if you're not willing to take some steps out of it. I'm happy to help you through this complexity if you're willing to get out of the mud so we have a easier path to walk on. And not every path is easy. This might go from one complex path to another, but it's not as draining. And that's an important concept, I think, as well. Is this path going to be as draining? It still might be draining, but it's not as draining as that one. So I'll take that 0.02% of gain so that I can have just enough more energy and not the drain that I used to feel because he's not on that path and I'm on this other path. I'll take that gain. But other people might try to pull you back into that vortex of misery and dysfunction because they don't want to do it alone, or they're comfortable where they are and any change makes them uncomfortable and they don't want to make any waves. So you're going to feel that too. You're going to have people in your life that want to bring you back because they just can't do it. They don't want to take the steps you're taking. I mean, if you're listening to a show like this and you're doing the work on yourself, you're healing and growing and improving and learning, then you are already on a path that a lot of people aren't on. And you may already be facing their resistance, their fears, their insecurities, because change is scary. Change is scary for everyone. Of course it is. But change is so scary for some people that they will not find out what it's like out of the mud. They will not find out. They don't want to find out, because if they get out of the mud, something they know well, what's the next road going to be? Full of nails and broken glass? Well, they'll never find out because they don't want to get out of the mud. So I see this path of deep mud that I'm going to continue to follow as long as I change nothing. But I see this other path that hasn't been walked yet. So let me see what happens when I get on that one. The worst case scenario in my mind is that's a worse path, and I guess I'll have to change again. I'll have to take another path. It doesn't really bother me to make these changes, even though it could be very difficult to do so. I mean, sometimes there are attachments involved, kids and other people, that will be affected. So I know that your decisions affect other people and other people's decisions. Yes, it's true. And there's going to be difficulties like that as well. But in general, as you follow your path in life, when the mud gets so deep and things become so complex, I look at it as you're probably going in the wrong direction, which means you're probably doing something that's causing you to feel drained over and over again. So you need to unpack what you're doing and figure out what you can do differently. And in the example I use, just to close this loop, I was talking about how some people can suck you back in because they don't want to deal with it by themselves. They don't want to change. And they may make your life difficult by saying, well, you don't care about us, or you're just being difficult, you're just being dramatic, and like I said before, you're just being a baby. Just put on your adult pants and take it like the rest of us. No, I don't want to. Well, then you're a big baby. I want you to rise up with me. I don't want to stay in that space. Are you happy in that space? Well, no, but that's just the way it is, and that's the way it's always been, and we're just going to have to face it until that person leaves or dies. This is what you want for the next 20, 30, 50 years? Is that how you want things to go? Is this how you want every family gathering to go? Using my example. Well, no, but I don't want to cause problems. I don't want to be that person. Well, both of us can be that person. You don't have to do it alone. Here I am. I'm going to do it. And I'm just kind of making this up as I go, but this is how I feel. This is what would happen. You know, I take a stand for myself and I kind of lead the way because sometimes somebody else needs to do it first. And that doesn't mean that you should be the first one to do it every time, but like I said, you're here learning about yourself and trying to improve yourself all the time. So you might be a step ahead of some other people. That doesn't mean you're better or superior and doesn't mean anything. Just means that you might have a few more steps. You just have a few more steps under your belt. You have done some work that helps you make decisions that are right for you. And because of that, you might then have somebody that says, I want to be where you are. I want to be happier. I want to have less stress in my life, even if it's a 0.02% gain. Well, this is great because I'm here for you. But when they aren't there for you, when they say, well, you're just being dramatic, you need to come back and you know your place, you need to be in that place. When they do that to you, that is their fear, their insecurity, their worry about what will happen, and they don't want things to change, and they especially don't want you to change because it changes the dynamic for them. And if they're not ready, they're not going to want to follow the same steps. If they don't want to follow the same steps, then that's their choice. And you may not get the support that you want, that you hope to get, which means you might alienate yourself from people you care about. But I do have to ask you to at least consider that people that care about you, people that love you, people that support you, the healthy desire, if you want to call it that, is for them to support your happiness, support the decisions you make, even if they disagree with your decisions, because you believe those decisions make you happy. And when they do that, that shows that they really do care about you. Even if they're fearful in their own life and they have their own challenges with maybe the same things you're dealing with or maybe different things, but when somebody can look at you and say, wow, you're doing something different, and that is so scary to me, but I applaud you for taking a stand for yourself, you know that they actually care about you and they want you to follow the path that they believe is right for you. When they don't do that, when they feel differently, then they're probably acting out of insecurity, fears, control issues, other things that they will need to work on in themselves, which is, you know, I want to make the point of you're going to have people that support you and you're going to have people that don't support you. And those that don't support you, yes, you may have to continue walking your path while they continue not supporting you and maybe even not liking you. So this is a very difficult path for many to follow. But what happens almost always, at least every time I've done it in my life, is that as I've followed my path, and the people that I left behind when I followed that path because they couldn't support my decisions, they have chosen not to be in my life anymore, or at least limit their time around me. And I know it sounds like I'm a jerk, like I'm just going to walk out of this relationship. I'm just going to walk out of this job. It's not that at all. I mean, I've had conversations. I've honored myself and said, hey, you know, let's work this out. That's a good thing to do. Let's talk about this. Let's work this out. It isn't a matter of just getting up and leaving. It's a matter of trying to communicate your needs and trying to work something out. But when it doesn't work out, what do you do then? Do you stay in the complexity? Do you continue trudging through the mud, hoping to get to a destination that may never be there? Or do you accept that there will be sacrifice and compromise along your path to an easier, less stressed life? Again, it doesn't mean that life is going to be easy. It just means that life is going to be a bit less stressful, which typically means it'll be a bit more easy, which typically leads to a bit more happiness. When we come back, I'm going to quick fire off about two or three emails to see if I can answer them really quick, but I wanted to kind of lay the groundwork for how I think, how I look at life. Not because I know I'm right, because I don't. Not because it's what you should do, because it isn't. It's whatever you choose to do, and I believe that you should have a choice. I believe that you should have a choice to listen to me and go, that's a bunch of BS, it won't work for me, and then say to yourself, I'm going to do it my way. That is empowering. That's exactly what you, quote, should do. You should do it your way. You should do it the way that empowers you most. You should do it the way that makes you feel good inside about yourself. And that's one thing I've learned through all of this. I thought I was ending this segment, but I'm just about done. One thing I've learned through all of this, my entire life of, or at least the last 10 or 15 years of healing and growing and working on myself and studying and learning and working with clients and writing, podcasting, everything that I've done in my life, I have learned that every time I walk a path that may be unpopular, that other people resist, that feels right to me, that seems to be the direction I want to take, every time I've pivoted course, every time I've headed toward that beacon, that lighthouse on the shore, to stay in alignment with what I really want for myself and how I really want to be treated and how I really want to feel inside, and making sure I'm aligned with my highest intentions inside of me, it has always led to being just a bit happier and a bit less stressed. Again, it doesn't eradicate stress and it doesn't eradicate unhappiness and all the negative feelings that you don't want to feel, but I do feel more comfortable in my skin every time I do it. And like I said earlier, it prepares me for the complexities of the future. We'll be right back. Speaking of feeling better, I always love talking about BetterHelp. BetterHelp is the sponsor of today's episode. They are customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. And they have a wide selection of therapists that you can choose from. And even if you're working with one of them, you can choose another one if it's not working out, if you can't get what you need out of them. A lot of people have their own specialties and there are personalities that work better with each other. And you just figure it out as you go along. And this is what BetterHelp allows you to do. And you can pick and choose who you want, but you'll probably find one pretty much right away. I've talked with their therapist. I've talked with their service. I've learned a lot about them and what they offer. They are much more affordable than in-person therapy. And as soon as you sign up, you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. You know, in the next segment, I'm going to talk about the time I went to therapy and how different it was for me back then and how I didn't have these options. And I wish I did, because I was an introvert and I still am. I didn't want to go out there and put all my stuff on the table and talk about it with a stranger. It didn't feel right, but it feels so different doing it either over the phone or on chat, like I said. And if you have more options, you have more opportunity, in my opinion, grow and heal through whatever you're dealing with, whether it's depression, stress, anxiety, anger, trauma, sleeping issues, LGBT matters, grief and self-esteem. Everything you share is confidential. It's a convenient, professional, affordable service, and they have so many testimonials posted on their site daily, and I've even received testimonials from people who've listened to the show, signed up for the service, and they're very happy they did. There are over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health today using BetterHelp, so I want you to check them out if you are looking for one-on-one professional guidance. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/brain. When you sign up, you'll get 10% off your first month. Go ahead, unload the stressors, and get some unbiased feedback, and maybe you'll finally have a path that does make life just a bit easier. BetterHelp, that's two words, better and help, HELP.com/brain. Welcome back. Like I said, I'm going to read you two or three emails and see if we can help these fine folks that are writing in or have written in. And keep in mind that what we talked about in the last segment, it applies. It applies to everything that I talk about here. It is good, or at least in my opinion, it is good to have a direction in your life and always be heading in that direction. Not that, you know, this is about goal setting or anything like that. It's about who you want to be and how you want your life to turn out, and how if you don't make some changes or go in a certain direction, that your life will go in a direction that just happens. It just lays it out for you. So this stuff that I talk about in this show can actually be helpful in you controlling the direction of your life instead of just letting it happen. Not to delay this any further, but I want to get to this first email, and I'm just going to read you a couple of the things this person said. This last year has been devastating. When she confessed that she cheated on me, I immediately called a help hotline through my healthcare provider and made an appointment to talk with a therapist who I've been meeting with since June. And let me see. In addition to seeing the therapist, I've been latching onto your podcast and all the episodes, and it's really been helpful. I'm certainly learning and growing as I listen to your episodes, take notes, and work to take positive actions and bettering myself. Prior to this summer, I'd never worked with a therapist. I like my therapist, but I'm not sure the sessions are providing me with the help I need. When I started with her, I communicated my two main goals. I was an emotional wreck, and I wanted help making rational decisions. And number two, I want to make sure I'm not a salty a-hole for the rest of my life. She is great and we have good conversations, but I don't feel like we talk about my feelings and the cause of them enough. Perhaps I need to do something different in my sessions, but I would like to try a different therapist to see if I can find a better fit. My question to you is, how would you recommend I search for a therapist that is a good match for me? Or am I giving up on my therapist too easily? Any advice on this would be appreciated. Okay, thank you so much for sharing that, and I'm sorry you're going through this struggle. This is a question I receive every now and then. How do I find the right therapist? I usually get it over at Love and Abuse, my other podcast, loveandabuse.com. People will write to me and say, you know, I want to find a therapist that deals with emotional abuse, and I want to deal with a therapist who helps me heal from emotional abuse or helps me change from being or heal from being the emotional abuser. And there are therapists that work with domestic violence and narcissistic abuse, but to find ones that specialize in a lot of the stuff that I talk about over at Love and Abuse, it's difficult. So that's why I get that question, because it's difficult to find someone like that. They're out there. They're definitely out there. But yeah, certainly this is a great question. I don't know if I have a great answer, quite honestly. I'll give you what comes to my mind. First of all, when I searched for a therapist during my depression after my first big breakup back in like 2015, maybe years ago, that wasn't a big search. I just looked up therapist. Maybe the yellow pages back then. I just looked it up. There's a therapist. I'll go talk to her. And when I went in there, I had a similar experience as you, but fortunately, I was a good talker, believe it or not, back then. I would actually just spit it all out. I would dig inside what's inside of me and just tell her about it and find out how she felt about it. And that really helped me to have her to listen and then ask questions. So it may be your approach to therapy and how you do it. For me, I just felt what I felt and expressed what I felt to her, and she listened. The thing I got out of therapy is that the more I shared anything that I was embarrassed about, felt guilty about, felt sad about, felt depressed about, all the negativity inside of me, I just shared it. And if she had a comment on it, it was great. If she didn't, at least I got it out. So my approach to therapy has been that. I just talk. That's not always preferred. Some people just want to share what's going on and have someone dig. That's what I used to do when I did one-on-one coaching. I would dig. I want to find out what's in there. Well, how does that make you feel? I mean, what's going on with that? Does that, you know, I saw you make an expression there. Are you sad about that? What's going on? And so there are those that dig, and then there are those that listen, and then there are those that do both. And I'm sure there are other variations of each. So if I were you, if I were looking for a therapist, I would probably ask, are they good at digging for repressed emotions? Are they good at trying to help me connect with those emotions and express them, or at least share them so that we can talk about them? This may be something you ask your current therapist. Can you do me a favor and dig? Can you help me uncover these emotions? Or can you recommend someone that can help me do that? Because I'm probably hiding stuff from myself. That would be my direction with that. I'm probably hiding stuff from myself. Or I don't want to talk about it, so I will probably hide them from you. That may sound odd, but if it's true, that would be a good thing to bring up, because a therapist is going to help you as much as they can if they have the ability to dig in there and pull stuff out for you. Some are very good at that, and some maybe not. I mean, everyone has a personality, and some personalities, they click. You know, your personality may click with her, and it might be great, and you get along, and you're friendly, but can she dig and pull stuff out where you can't do that necessarily? Because why are you seeking therapy? Because you probably can't do it yourself, or you need a third party to see things objectively because you're too much in it. You're too much part of it. And so because you're a part of it, you can't obviously give the best advice to yourself sometimes. Some people can. So that's what I would ask. Can you dig and try to get these repressed emotions out? And if she said, oh yeah, we can do that, then great. You can work with her on that. If she can't, or she doesn't know what you're talking about, she might not know what you mean. Maybe she was trained to do certain things in a certain way. And if that were the case, then you might have to seek someone else. And hopefully she can either refer you or give you a network so you can choose from people, or you might have to go back to the yellow pages if you know what those are. For the younger generation, that's a phone book before the internet. But you can look online, look in the phone book if you have one of those, and just call a few people and ask that question. Are you good at digging things up that I am good at repressing? That might be another way to phrase it. Plus, I didn't read this on the air, but you said that you are doing Zoom sessions, which gives you a wide variety of people to choose from. I mean, you heard my ad, right? BetterHelp, that's a great place to go as well. Some people really dig that site, and you have a choice of therapists there as well. But the point is, no matter who you use, that's a good question to ask them, because you want them to be able to do it and feel confident that they can do that. So that would be my first part of the answer for you. And your second question, which I think I already answered, is, am I giving up on my current therapist too easily? I sort of did answer that, but here's the thing. Nobody can enter your mind and tell you what's going on. You kind of have to let them know what's going on. So that does mean revealing things that might be on your mind. So even if it's not on your mind, I like to go in the direction of how I feel inside. Even if that's just walking in the door and saying, you know what? I have no joy for life. It's something generic like that. Let's just say I said that. I have no joy for life. I don't know what to do. So I'm not talking. I'm not telling her my life story. I'm just walking in, telling her the issue I'm dealing with. I have no joy for life. She may say, why do you feel that way? Or what happened in your life that caused you to feel that way? What's going on? Which is great. It's a good starting point because you can go from there. And maybe your answer is, I don't know. If your answer is, I don't know, hopefully she can dig. That's that digging part. But that's what I like to do, is just tell her the problem so that she can help me reveal it. This is something I learned when calling tech support. I've learned that most of the time, if I call tech support, if I just tell them what the problem is and I don't add all the drama, the story, or anything like that, I just say, my computer does this, or whatever I'm calling about, they'll walk me through their script or their steps, and they'll eventually get to the point where we're both at. Like, I tried all those steps, but I'm going to do them anyway. And they'll get to that point where that, now they need to dig. Now they need to go further, because I'm not adding any fluff to what I'm saying. So I will sometimes just say, or most of the time just say, my problem is X. And then they will walk me through it. This is something you can do with a therapist. I am depressed. I don't know what to do. And then find out what they say. A good therapist is going to say, okay, let's work with that. When did it start? Or how do you feel right now? Or were you always depressed? They're going to ask you questions. These are all probing questions. They're all diving into your psyche and your emotions. And they're going to do it, hopefully, in a way and at a pace that makes you comfortable. Because as soon as you feel uncomfortable, you're going to want to walk out. You're not going to want to share. So I like to see that in any counselor or therapist, that they are willing to dive in there and dig. And they're actually curious about what you're going through because they want to help you. So I hope I've given you enough to seek the right therapist, to ask the right questions. And I hope that helps you get into a better space inside yourself. So I wish you the best with this. The person who wrote, I know you're going through some stuff. Definitely read my article on infidelity. I didn't get into the details of your letter on the air, but go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com, type in the word infidelity, and you will find a few articles. I think the one you're looking for that you should read is Surviving Infidelity. And once you read that, you're going to have a very good understanding of both sides of it, as far as the pain, the suffering, and the healing that would and could and will and should take place. That's the best way to explain it. Just go there, read the article. I believe it's worth the read. And as you'll see from the many dozens of comments, that it has helped a lot of people understand the situation better and even come to terms with what happened. So that's the best I can do for you. I'm going to go right to this next email and see what else we can do. This person wrote a very short email. I'm struggling with my thoughts and actions to be divorced and a parent. My ex wants to work on things but vanishes when I have something to say. I'm lost and I can feel my mind on a merry-go-round. All right, that's it. Thank you for sharing that. Sorry for the struggle you're dealing with. That's tough. If you have an ex that wants to work on things but vanishes, my thoughts on that are that ex doesn't want to work on things. Period. That person doesn't want to work on things. Somebody who wants to work on things will reach out and say, oh, we got to work on things. I really want this to work. What do we need to do? What can I do? What do you need from me? That's what the ex who wants to work on things, in my opinion, should say. The person who disappears, that person doesn't want to work on anything. That person wants what they want and doesn't really care what you want, because when you are sharing what you want, they vanish. And when they vanish, that's not very supportive. In fact, it's not support at all. That's like saying, I only want what I want. I don't care what you want. Just do what I want, and then we'll be happy. That smells like emotional abuse. There might be some emotional abuse in that situation. So if that person vanishes, then I'm going to be blunt with you. They don't want to work on things. So I want you to just accept in your mind that they don't want to work on things. Otherwise, not only would they be there, they'd be fully present, and they'd be doing everything possible to make it work. This is one of those situations I talked about where, for example, this relationship shouldn't be that complex. A relationship that both people work on, yes, there are going to be difficulties, but when you have two people working at it, you can feel it. You can feel the investment from both people. If only one person is working on it, it won't be a relationship. It isn't one, and it won't be one. So this is the tough love part of my episode where I tell you, if they're not investing their time and energy and offering anything they can do to help work on this and do their part, then they're not working on it. They're not creating something that you both want. They're only creating something they want. That's just not going to work out. So you're feeling lost and you can feel your mind on a merry-go-round. Absolutely. It might be because you keep hoping and wishing and praying that this person shows up the way they're supposed to, but they don't. This is why you kind of have to let go of this person and their intentions, because their intentions aren't in your best interest. They're only in theirs. You know, from the very little stuff I read, I could be wrong, but from what you just shared, if they vanish, then that's not their intention. Their intention is not to make an equitable relationship that feels fair, that feels like both people are benefiting. It just doesn't sound like that at all. So I would recommend that you don't rely on this person. This person says they want to work on stuff, and you shouldn't believe it. That might hurt. I know that might hurt. I'm sorry. But you need to take care of yourself now, because the person who says they're going to show up but doesn't can't be relied on. So you have to accept without a doubt that they will not invest their time and energy into the relationship in a fair way. They only want it their way. So I'm going to leave you with that. And if you have another follow-up question to that, or I didn't answer it correctly, please let me know, because I know this is a tough place to be. A relationship that ends is very difficult. There's a lot of feelings. There's a lot of hurt. I look at it as there's a new hole in your heart, or a big gap in how you feel, and you need to fill that hole or fill that gap with something. And since they're not in your life anymore, you have to rebuild it in yourself. That's a lot of self-love, a lot of self-compassion, a lot of work on yourself. And you have to be your own best friend. Sometimes you have to be your own parent, and you just have to take care of yourself, because the person that you had in your life is no longer there. And that does leave a blank space inside of you. So you have to fill that up again. And that's how I do it. So I wish you the best with this. And I wish you much strength with this. And I'm going to go into the outro part of our show, where I say my thank yous and my goodbyes. And I'll read you, I think I have one more. I'll read you the last email during the outro. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be right back, like I said, with my thank yous and goodbyes and my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank our sponsor, BetterHelp. Go to betterhelp.com/brain and get 10% off your first month. Excellent service. I highly recommend them. I also want to thank our financial backers of this week. It's Anne-Marie, Victoria, Tracy, Christy, Fuang, and Andrea. Love you guys. And Kayla is brand new. Love you too. So glad that you are supporting the show. These are the patrons that I read every week. They're different names every week, and I like to thank them on the air, and I am very grateful for you, everyone that supports the show. Thank you so much. Great to have you here, Kayla. Glad you joined. Thank you again. If you find value in this show and you'd like to give back, visit moretob.com And you can choose a single donation or monthly, or if you're a monthly contributor in the Patreon program, I give back with private episodes, worksheets, and a video archive. Check it out over at moretob.com. And I mentioned it before, if you're looking for a show on navigating the difficult relationship, head over to my other podcast, Love and Abuse, at loveandabuse.com. On that show, I help you pinpoint the behaviors that are causing you to leave every conversation feeling bad. That is important to understand and important to figure out, because you don't want to continue feeling bad. You want to start feeling good, like I was talking about in the first segment. How can we do things that help us move in the direction of feeling good? And if you think you're the difficult person in the relationship, that's why I created the program called Healed Being. Go to healedbeing.com and see if you fit the criteria of doing emotionally abusive behavior. And I say that's a popular program in a good way, because that means that the people that have figured out that they might be hurting other people, they don't want to hurt them anymore. And sometimes that's hard to stop doing for some people. It was for me. I kept hurting my wife when I was married, and I didn't want to hurt her anymore. It was just awful, and I didn't want to be judgmental or critical or mean anymore. And so I finally had to heal from that, and I share not only my processes, but everything I've learned since then on how to stop doing that behavior. It's over at healedbeing.com if you are doing behavior that you want to change as well. And finally, thanks to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And for my final words, I'm going to read you another message that I get every now and then. It's the question, am I the narcissist? I hear this from a lot, actually, from victims of emotional abuse, because the hurtful person, the emotionally abusive person, will call the other person a narcissist or an abusive person. And what that does is something I call the turnaround game. The turnaround game is causing the other person to get into defense mode. So if I called you a narcissist, what are you going to say? You're probably going to say, I'm not a narcissist. I'm not hurting you. I'm not doing all this behavior that you're telling me I'm doing. And what that does is cause you to focus on yourself instead of me. I talk all about this over at Love and Abuse. I talk about how the turnaround game is an emotionally abusive tactic to make you focus on yourself, which takes the spotlight off of the person doing it. And so the question I get is, am I a narcissist? You know, my ex says this, or my spouse says that. They say that I'm doing these behaviors, and I'm just not sure. And I try to be nice, and I'm trying to do the right thing, but they say all these things about me, and maybe it's true. And I have to say this over and over again. If you are worried that you're doing the wrong thing, if you are reflecting about the stuff that you're doing because you don't want to hurt someone else, if you are reaching out to anyone like me, anyone, and saying, am I the one that's doing this? Am I the narcissist? Then I am 99.999% sure that you are not the narcissist or a narcissist. Doesn't mean that you couldn't possibly be, but you know, diagnosable narcissistic personality disorder is something that contains certain elements. There are certain components of NPD that you will not fit if you are any of those things. If you are feeling bad or reflecting or reaching out to somebody like me, you would not fit these components, because A, narcissists don't believe they're wrong. They don't even see that as an option. I can't be wrong. They don't take responsibility. I guess you could call that B. But it's the same thing. I don't believe I'm wrong. I don't take responsibility. C, I don't care. I don't care about changing. I don't care about anyone but myself. That's not always true, but most of the time it is. They actually do care, but sometimes it's an unhealthy way they care. That's another episode. But what I'm saying is that they have no empathy. So if you're hurting, oh, you're hurting. Okay. Instead of, oh my God, you're hurting. Are you okay? No, you're hurting. Okay. What's for dinner? I mean, they'll be that cold. So they don't have empathy, and they don't reflect. Narcissists don't reflect on what they did. They are just doing what they do to get their needs met, and they are feeding themselves with you as their supply. or other victims, and what they are doing is just basically draining you. There's that word again, draining. I'm draining you of your energy because I want what I want, and I don't care what you want. And I'm going to get what I want because I don't care. I don't care who I steamroll. I'm going to get what I want, and I don't care. So if you are thinking that you're a narcissist and you're listening to a show like this hoping to gain some wisdom, then you're probably not a narcissist because they're not into gaining wisdom. They're into just getting what they want without caring. That's what I want. I'm going to take it. That's what I want. I don't care. So that will probably not be you. It could be you. I mean, I'm not qualified to diagnose anyone, so it could be. But that's my experience with narcissism, is that narcissists wouldn't listen to a show like this. They would not reach out and ask if they're the narcissist because they don't reflect and they don't care about changing. The person who asks if they're a narcissist is usually the person that wants help. They're usually the person that wants to change because they don't want to be the narcissist. The narcissist doesn't care if they're called a narcissist or if they are a narcissist. They probably don't believe they're a narcissist. How many times can I say narcissist? So, no, I don't think you're a narcissist if you're listening to this show. And at the same time, I could be wrong, but I don't think so. And let me give you this final thing. It is possible you have narcissistic tendencies. That's a whole different ball of wax. I think most of us have them every now and then because sometimes we are selfish. Sometimes we aren't empathetic when we should be. Sometimes we just don't care. I mean, it may not be you, but I know that there are many times in my life where I had narcissistic tendencies. And I just have to be aware of it and make sure I catch myself and make sure I understand that, hey, I'm not being empathetic right now. Or, hey, I'm attached to being right and I just don't care how the other person feels. I just want to be right. Whoa, that might be a narcissistic tendency. I don't want to do that. Or how about, no, I have no toxic qualities and I'm not dysfunctional. That could be a narcissistic tendency right there. I'm not willing to look inward and reflect that I might have something wrong or might have something that I need to work on. So most of us can go through something like that. We can have those tendencies and we just have to be aware of them and catch them. But no, if you're writing to me and asking me, am I the narcissist? No, probably not. So that answers your email if you were starting to write me asking me if I thought you were a narcissist. I'm going to say no, I don't think so. Doesn't make me right. It just makes me confident. So we'll go with that. And let me come back real quick to what I started to say about the turnaround game. Just be aware of it. Be aware of how people will divert your attention and put it back on you so that they do not have to be accountable for their actions. This is something I definitely talk about over at loveandabuse.com, is that the turnaround game puts the focus, puts the spotlight back on you so that they don't have to say anything about what they did. A good example of this is, let's just say a couple is fighting and the one partner says, you were out late. Were you with anyone else? And the other partner says, what do you mean, was I with anyone else? What about you when you were out late that one night and you said that you were with your friend, but it turned out that you weren't really with your friend. You were with two friends. You know, something stupid like that. And that partner goes, what do you mean, two friends? Well, that was nothing. You already know that was nothing. We already had this conversation. Well, I don't know about that because after I thought about it, I wondered if you were cheating on me. And the other partner goes, what? Cheating on you? I didn't cheat on you. Why would I cheat? When was this? What are you talking about? I didn't cheat on you. Well, how am I supposed to know? And you can see where this is going. Partner A put the focus on partner B, so partner B has to explain themselves so partner A can stay out of trouble. Just be aware of this. It happens a lot. It happens in my own relationship. I have to bring it back and say, look, okay, yes, we can talk about that, but let's talk about this first because I want to talk about this subject. This subject, you're taking me off track. And I'm not putting her down for doing that, but that's what happens in relationships and arguments. That's one of the ways we argue sometimes. What I did, what about what you did? That's what you'll hear. What about what you did? Remember that time you did that? It just takes the focus off the subject so that the subject can be avoided, especially if the person really did do something wrong and they don't want to answer for it. Be aware of that. If you want more information on that, head over to loveandabuse.com and you'll find the turnaround game over there. It's an important episode because it probably happens to every one of us, not just anyone in an emotionally abusive relationship. I appreciate you tuning in. Thank you so much. And let me share with you that it's important that you keep your mind open so that you can step into your power, which helps you be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and you know, this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.
Of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
92% because of a bike?
Not just bikes. We also make treadmills and rowers.
Oh, let me guess, for elite athletes only, right?
Nope. It doesn't matter if you're an avid exerciser or new to working out. Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try Peloton bikes, tread, or row risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.